Hi, this is Mrs. English. Thank you for joining me for Homer's Iliad. This is the Richmond Latimer translation. Go ahead, open your book with me, and we will read this together. Please go to Book 1. Sing, goddess, the anger of Peleus' son Achilles, and its devastation, which put pains thousandfold upon the Achaeans, hurled in their multitudes to the house of Hades. Strong souls of heroes, but gave their bodies to be the delicate feasting of dogs, of all birds. And the will of Zeus was accomplished, since that time when first there stood in division of conflict Atreus' son, the lord of men, and brilliant Achilles. What Homer does with this first sentence or paragraph, it's a giant run-on sentence. First he invokes the muse. He asks the goddess, the muse is a goddess, to inspire him. He's telling her, you sing, goddess, of the anger of Achilles and all the problems that it brought, pains thousandfold upon the Achaeans. This is called invoking the muse. The idea is to convince us, to convince we, the listeners, that the muse is inspiring him because she was there and he was not. And so she's supposed to sing through him. And what is she going to sing about? What is the theme of this epic? It is the anger of Achilles. This word for anger, if you end up doing a little bit of Greek, is the Greek word for rage, manus. Normally, this type of anger or rage is only applied in speaking about a god or goddess, because they obviously can have a worse rage than anyone else. So instantly, Homer's audience is on the alert, and they realize, oh my goodness, this anger of Peleus is this menace of Achilles. This is a terrible rage. It is more than human, and you'll know why later. And what happens because of his anger? Thousands of Achaeans, thousands of Greeks, those who come from Achaea, are hurled to the house of Hades. Hades is the god of the underworld. Hades and Zeus and Poseidon rule the world as a threesome. Poseidon has the sea, Hades has the underworld, and Zeus has the world and everything above it. So he's hurling down to the house of Hades strong souls of heroes. But what happened to Achilles with their bodies? Those were left for the delicate feasting of dogs and birds. This is the most terrible thing that can happen to your body. Because if you are a pagan, you believe that when you die, if the body is not buried, your soul or whatever is left will not be able to rest peacefully. It will wander aimlessly. If you drown, this is a particularly horrid death, because if you drown, they may not find the body and bury it, and you can't get down to Hades then and be at rest. I won't say peace, but to be at rest. About line 7 now. What god was it then set them together in bitter collision? And who has come into bitter collision? Atreus' son, the lord of men, that's Agamemnon. Agamemnon is the son of Atreus. Atreus is a famous, famous classical person. You'll know who he is later. So to say, Atreus' son, the lord of men, and then brilliant Achilles, they are set for collision. One king, who is the lord of many men, and he's going to go back to get his brother Menelaus' wife Helen back from the Trojans, where she ran away or was stolen, depending on who you ask. And they go to attack Troy, and his argument is with Achilles, the greatest of the Greek warriors. They really need Achilles. He is the greatest warrior. Without them, they cannot win. And why? Because Achilles is a demigod. A demigod, you look it up in your glossary, means one of his parents was a god. His mother was Thetis, a sea nymph. So Achilles is a demigod. What god was it then set them together in bitter collision? Zeus's son and Leto's Apollo, who in anger at the king drove the foul pestilence along the host, and the people perished. Since Atreus's son, that's Agamemnon, had dishonored Chryses, the priest of Apollo, when he came beside the fast ships of the Achaeans, to ransom back his daughter, carrying gifts beyond count, and holding in his hands, wound on a staff of gold, the ribbons of Apollo, who strikes from afar, and supplicated, he begged, all the Achaeans, but above all Atreus's two sons, the marshals of the people. Atreus's two sons are Agamemnon and Menelaus. They are the two greatest kings. Menelaus was married to Helen, who has been stolen or ran away, depending on who you ask, and his other son is Agamemnon, who is more vicious, more brutal, and determined to not only go get Helen for the sake of the honor of the Greeks, but also to sack Troy while they are there and take home some goodies. So Apollo, the god's priest, this pagan priest, came with a staff, and he's Apollo's priest, a staff of gold, and he's got ribbons dangling on it. And it's not just Apollo, it's Apollo with an epithet, Apollo who strikes from afar. And he supplicated, begged the Greeks, but above all he begged Atreus' two sons, line 16, the marshals of the people. Now this is the priest speaking. Sons of Atreus, and you other strong, grieved Achaeans, to you may the gods grant, who have their homes on Olympus, Priam's city to be plundered, and a fair homecoming thereafter. But may you give me back my own daughter, and take the ransom, giving honor to Zeus's son, who strikes from afar, Apollo. This is the plea that Chryses, the priest of Apollo, made to get his daughter Chryses back from Agamemnon. Then all the rest of the Achaeans cried out in favor that the priest should be respected and the shining ransom taken. So all the Greeks are saying, yeah, take the ransom, give back the girl, let's do it. Yet this pleased not the heart of Atreus' son, Agamemnon, but harshly he drove him away with a strong order upon him. And now line 26, this is your first paraphrase. And what does Agamemnon tell the priest when he drives him away and refuses to give his daughter back to him? Never let me find you again, old sir, near our hollow ships, neither lingering now nor coming again hereafter, for fear your staff and the gods' ribbons help you no longer. The girl I will not give back. Sooner will old age come upon her in my own house, in Argos, far from her own land, going up and down by the loom, and weaving for me, and being my companion. Be sure you're reading this on your own. So go now, do not make me angry, so you will be safer. So he spoke, and the old man, in terror, obeyed him and went silently away beside the murmuring sea beach. Line 35. Over and over the old man prayed as he walked in solitude to King Apollo, whom Leto of the lovely hair bore. Hear me, Lord of the Silver Bow. So now the priest, the pagan priest, is praying to his god, to Apollo. He's going to pray curses down upon the Greeks. Hear me, Lord of the Silver Bow, who set your power above Chryse and Cilla the Sacrosanct, who are lord in strength over Tenedos, Smintheus. If ever it pleased your heart that I built your temple, if ever it pleased you that I burned all the rich thigh pieces of bulls, of goats, then bring to pass this wish I pray for. Let your arrows make the Danaans pay for my tears shed. Line 42, the Danaans, these again are the Greeks. This is another word for the Greeks. Chryses, the priest, has just prayed for Apollo to punish the Greeks. And he refers to Apollo in line 39 as Smintheus. Be sure and look that up in your glossary. Somewhat of a mouth god. Very interesting. And there are some possible ties to the Old Testament. So he spoke in anger, line 43. And Phoebus Apollo. The word Phoebus is the Greek word for shining, shining Apollo. So he spoke in prayer, and shining Apollo heard him, and strode down along the pinnacles of Olympus, angered in his heart, carrying across his shoulders the bow and the hooded quiver, and the shafts clashed on the shoulders of the god, walking angrily. Homer is painting a word picture here for his audience. We are to imagine the giant god Apollo with, he's angry, and he has his bow and his quiver, and the shafts are banging together as he walks angrily across the mountaintops. Line 47. He came as night comes down, and knelt then, apart, and opposite the ships, and let go an arrow. Terrible was the clash that rose from the bow of silver. Line 50. First he went down after the mules and the circling hounds. Then let go a tearing arrow against the men themselves and struck them. The corpse fires burned everywhere and did not stop burning. 9 days up and down the host ranged the gods' arrows, but on the 10th, Achilles called the people to assembly. That was line 54. What is the god Apollo doing? Metaphorically, we are told that Apollo is shooting arrows. And what does that really mean? Something bad has been happening to the Greek soldiers for 9 days. It's been happening for 9 days ever since Agamemnon refused to give back Chryses to her father Chryses. So they're going to assume Apollo is mad at them and he's hitting them with arrows. Arrows of sickness, illness, possibly plague. Be sure and read all of your notes, please. Line 54. But on the 10th, Achilles called the people to assembly. A thing put into his mind by the goddess of the white arms, Hera, who had pity upon the Danaans when she saw them dying. And now when they were all assembled in one place together, Achilles of the swift feet stood up among them and spoke forth, Son of Atreus. So he's speaking in front of all the men, and he's talking to Agamemnon, the son of Atreus. I believe now that straggling backwards we must make our way home, if we can even escape death, if fighting now must crush the Achaeans, and the plague likewise. So they are suffering under some type of a plague, and it's been 9 days, and it began when they refused the priest, so they are assuming it's because Agamemnon refused the priest. No, come, let us ask some holy man, some prophet, even an interpreter of dreams, since a dream also comes from Zeus, who can tell why Phoebus Apollo is so angry? If for the sake of some vow, some hecatomb, it's a very large offering, he blames us, line 65, if given the fragrant smoke of lambs, of he-goats, somehow he can be made willing to beat the bane aside from us. You have several vocabulary words here. Look those up so you understand as you go. So Achilles stood up in front of the people and he said, let's ask our own soothsayer, some prophet, why Apollo is angry with us. He spoke thus and sat down again, and among them stood up Calchas, Thestor's son, far the best of the bird interpreters, who knew all things that were, the things to come and the things past. That's line 70. Feel free to ask me next week what a bird interpreter does. I read a very interesting book recently on ancients and bird interpretation and how it may have been related to weather patterns that and electrical storms that made birds act very abnormal, and then the ancients took those for signs from the gods. Very interesting. Line 70. So the bird interpreters know all things that were, the things to come and the things past, who guided into the land of Ilion, or to Troy, the ships of the Achaeans, the Greeks, through the seer craft of his own that shining Apollo gave him. He in kind intention toward all stood forth and addressed them. So now he, Calchas, stands forward. Achilles said, some interpreter, tell us what's going on here. So Calchas stands forward. In line 74, he says, you have bidden me, Achilles, beloved of Zeus, to explain to you this anger of Apollo, the lord who strikes from afar. Then I will speak. Yet make me a promise and swear before me readily by word and work of your hands to defend me, since I believe I shall make a man angry who holds great kinship over the men of Argos, and all the Achaeans obey him. Line 79. Here we have a hint. Calchas is afraid to say what the problem is, because the problem is with Agamemnon, the greatest king there. So first he makes Achilles swear to protect him. Then he will tell what's wrong. Line 80. For a king, when he is angry with a man beneath him, is too strong. And suppose even for the day itself he swallow down his anger, he still keeps bitterness that remains until its fulfillment deep in his chest. Speak forth, then. Tell me if you will protect me. Then in answer again spoke Achilles of the swift feet. Speak, interpreting whatever you know, and fear nothing. Line 85. In the name of Apollo, beloved of Zeus, to whom you, Calchas, make your prayers, when you interpret the gods' will to the Danaans, no man, so long as I am alive, above earth and see daylight, shall lay the weight of his hands on you beside the hollow ships, not one of all the Danaans, even if you mean Agamemnon, line 90, who now claims to be far the greatest of all the Achaeans. At this, The blameless seer, a seer is a prophet, took courage again and spoke forth. No, it's not for the sake of some vow or hecatomb. All right, Apollo's not angry because we made a vow and didn't keep it. He's not angry because we should have given him a hecatomb offering, an offering of 100 animals. It's not for some vow or hecatomb he blames us, but for the sake of his priest, whom Agamemnon dishonored and would not give him back his daughter nor accept the ransom. Line 94, Agamemnon dishonored Apollo's priest. To be dishonored is the worst thing that can happen to you. In your reading this week, as you look through the glossary, you will see shame culture and guilt culture. Our culture today in America is called a guilt culture by psychologists because it is believed that our behaviors are based on a guilt conscience. We do not do bad things because we will have a guilty conscience. For the ancients, and of course that's not taking a theological interpretation, for the ancients, their society was based on honor. He who dies with the most honor wins. You want honor. To be dishonored, especially to be dishonored publicly, is the supreme insult. Line 96. Therefore the archers sent griefs against us, and will send them still, nor sooner thrust back the shameful plague from the Danaans, until we give the glancing-eyed girl back to her father, without price, without ransom, and lead also a blessed hecatomb to Chrysa, the priest, the girl's father, thus we might propitiate and persuade him. That's line 100. Look up the meaning of propitiation in as a theological term, and you also have a couple of pages on propitiation in your from J.I. Packer in your syllabus this week. He spoke thus and sat down again, and among them stood up Atreus' son, the war, the hero, wide-ruling Agamemnon, raging, the heart within filled black to the brim with anger from beneath. That's 104. But his two eyes showed like fire in their blazing. First of all, he eyed Calchas bitterly and spoke to him. So Agamemnon's very mad that Calchas has said it's his fault that they've had a plague for 9 days, and the only way to get rid of it is not only to give the girl back to her father, but to give her back and not get any ransom in return for her, and to have to make many animal sacrifices to make up for it. Line 106. This is what Agamemnon says to Calchas. Seer of evil. That's the Greek kakon, evil. Kakos is evil. We used to call cat that. Seer of evil. Never yet have you told me a good thing. Always the evil things are dear to your heart to prophesy, but nothing excellent have you said nor ever accomplished. Now once more you make divination to the Danaans, argue forth your reason why he who strikes from afar afflicts them, because I, for the sake of the girl Chryses, would not take the shining ransom. And indeed, I wish greatly to have her in my own house, since I like her better than Clytemnestra, my own wife. For in truth, she is no way inferior, neither in build, nor stature, nor wit, not in accomplishment. Line 115. Still, I am willing to give her back, if such is the best way. I myself desire that my people be safe, not perish. Find me, then, some prize that shall be my own, lest I only among the Argives go without, since that were unfitting. So Agamemnon says, if I must give her back, I will. But if I have to give her back, especially in such an embarrassing public display and loss of honor, I have to have another prize. I'm the greatest king. It would be unfitting for me to go without. Line 20. Line 120. You are all witnesses to this thing, that my prize goes elsewhere. Then in answer again spoke brilliant, swift-footed Achilles. So now Achilles is speaking to Atreus. The greatest warrior is speaking to the greatest king. Son of Atreus, most lordly, greediest for gain of all men, how shall the great-hearted Achaeans give you a prize now? There's no great store of things lying about I know of, but what we took from the cities by storm has been distributed. It is unbecoming for the people to call back things once given. No, for the present, Give the girl back to the god. We Achaeans, thrice and four times over, will repay you, if ever Zeus gives into our hands the strong-walled city of Troy to be plundered. So Achilles says, wait till we get the... You can't take presents from other people, they're prizes. Wait till, if the gods allow it, wait till we take Troy, and you can have four times that. Line 130. What does Agamemnon think of that? Then in answer again, spoke powerful Agamemnon, not that way, good fighter though you be, godlike Achilles. Strive to cheat, for you will not deceive, you will not persuade me. What do you want? To keep your own prize and have me sit here lacking one? Remember, ladies, they're talking about a girl. Are you ordering me to give this girl back? Line 135. Either the great-hearted Achaeans shall give me a new prize, chosen according to my desire, to atone for the girl lost, or else, if they will not give me one, I myself shall take her, your own prize, or that of Aias, we call him Ajax, or that of Odysseus, going myself in person, and he whom I visit will be bitter. Still, these are things we shall deliberate again hereafter. Line 140. Come now, we must haul a black ship down to the bright sea, and assemble rowers enough for it, and put on board it the hecatomb, the offering all the animals, and the girl herself, Chryses of the fair cheeks, and let there be one responsible man in charge of her, either Aias or Idomeneus, or brilliant Odysseus, or you yourself, son of Peleus, most terrifying of all men, to reconcile by accomplishing sacrifice the archer. So they need to send a man with the black ship and the girl and the hecatomb offering, all the goodies. They're going to send the girl back, and somebody needs to be in charge of that. Then, looking darkly at him, Achilles of the swift feet spoke, "Oh, wrapped in shamelessness, with your mind forever on profit, how shall any one of the Achaeans readily obey you, either to go on a journey or to fight men strongly in battle? I, for my part, did not come here for the sake of the Trojan spearmen to fight against them, since to me they've done nothing." Okay, Achilles did not come here to kill Trojans because he's angry at Trojans. He came here to fight for another reason. Why is that? Never yet have they driven away my cattle or my horses. Never in Phthia, where the soil is rich and men grow great, did they spoil my harvest, since indeed there is much that lies between us, the shadowy mountains and the echoing sea. But for your sake, O great shamelessness, we followed, to do you favor, you with the dog's eyes, to win your honor and Menelaus's from the Trojans. Line 160. You care all this, or else you care nothing. You forget all this, or else you care nothing. And now my prize you threaten in person to strip from me, for whom I labored much, the gift of the sons of the Achaeans. And what do you think his prize is? Of course, it's Achilles' girl. Never, when the Achaeans sack some well-founded citadel of the Trojans, that means a well-founded city, do I have a prize that is equal to your prize? Always the greater part of the painful fighting is the work of my hands, but when the time comes to distribute the booty, yours is far the greater reward, and I, with some small thing, yet dear to me, go back to my ships when I'm weary with fighting. Now I'm returning to Phthia. I'm going home, since it's much better to go home again with my curved ships, and I'm minded no longer to stay here dishonored and pile up your wealth and your luxury. What did Achilles just threaten to do? He says, I'm going home. If you're going to take away my prize, and the Trojans didn't do anything to me anyway, I'm not angry at them. I'm going home. I win all of this just for you. Then answered him in turn the lord of men, Agamemnon. And remember, they're arguing publicly. Run away by all means if your heart drives you. I will not entreat you to stay here for my sake. There are others with me who will do me honor. Notice how many times we see the word honor, honor and dishonor. There are others with me who will do me honor, and above all, Zeus of the councils, line 175. To me you are the most hateful of all the kings whom the gods love, because Achilles is the king of the Myrmidons, his own people, but Agamemnon is the greatest king represented here on the plains of Troy, the Greeks attacking the Trojans. Agamemnon has brought the most men, therefore he's the greatest. Forever quarreling is dear to your heart, and wars and battles, and if you are very strong indeed, that is a god's gift. Go home then with your own ships and your own companions. Line 180. Be king over the Myrmidians. I care nothing about you. I take no account of your anger. But here is my threat to you. Even as Phoebus, shining Apollo, is taking away my Chryses, I shall convey her back in my own ship with my own followers. Okay? If you won't take her back, I will take her back. I'll take her back. But I shall take the fair-cheeked Briseis, your prize. I myself going to your shelter, that you may learn well how much greater I am than you, and another man may shrink back from likening himself to me and contending against me. Here we have Agamemnon telling Achilles, great, if you won't take her back, I will take her back. I'll take her back, get no prizes, take her back with the hecatomb, all the animal offerings, but I'm going to come to your place, your shelter, your tent, and I'm going to take your prize, a Briseis, of course, a girl. So he spoke, and the anger came on Peleus' son. Achilles is the son of Peleus, that's his father, so we hear him referred to as Peleus' son. The anger came on Peleus' son, and what do we know about Achilles' anger? He has an anger management problem. The theme of this story is the anger of Achilles. And the anger came on Peleus' son, and within his shaggy breast the heart was divided two ways, pondering, line 190, he's thinking of two things, pondering whether to draw from beside his thigh the sharp sword, driving away all those who stood between, and kill the son of Atreus, Agamemnon, or else to check the spleen within, and keep down his anger. To check your spleen means to calm down. Now, as he weighed in mind and spirit these two courses, whether to calm down or kill Agamemnon, and was drawing from its scabbard the great sword, Athena descended from the sky. Line 195. If we are Homer and we are telling a poem, we're telling a story, it is much more dramatic to say Achilles was trying to decide whether to kill Agamemnon or whether to calm down. We can't just say he calmed down. And so we say, a goddess came to him and convinced him to calm down. For Achilles to manage his anger must have had the intervention of a god. Back to line 195. Just as he was drawing his scabbard, the great sword, Athena descended from the sky. For Hera, the goddess of the white arms, sent her, who loved both men equally in her heart and cared for them. The goddess, standing behind Peleus' son, caught him by the fair hair, appearing to him only, for no man of the others saw her. In the Greek it actually says long red hair is what Achilles had. Achilles, in amazement, turned about, and straightway, line 200, knew Pallas Athena. This is Athena, and the terrible eyes shining. He uttered winged words and addressed her, why have you come now, O child of Zeus of the Aegis? What's the Aegis? Her shield with the Gorgon's head on it that puts fright into the enemies. Why have you come now, O child of Zeus of the Aegis, once more? And he's speaking to a goddess. Is it that you may see the outrageousness? And this word in the Greek is hubris. We use this in our New Testament for the word sin. His outrageousness in line 203 is the Greek word hubris, which is sin. For the ancients, outrageousness is different than what we think of as sin. We think of sin against God, and they just mean wrong, wrong, wrong. Is it that you may see the outrageousness of the son of Atreus, Agamemnon? Yet will I tell you this thing, and I think it shall be accomplished. Line 205. By such acts of arrogance, he may even lose his own life. So Achilles tells even the goddess, if he is arrogant like this, he may kill himself, because I'm going to run him through with my sword. Then in answer, the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, spoke to him, I have come down to stay your anger, means to stop it, but will you obey me? From the sky and the goddess of the white arms, Hera, sent me, who loves both of you equally in her heart and cares for you. Line 210. Come then, do not take your sword in your hand. Keep clear of fighting, though indeed with words you may abuse him, and it will be that way. All right, you can't kill him, Athena says. But what did she give Achilles permission to do to Agamemnon? Line 211. But with words you may abuse him. So you can say all of the terrible things you want to Agamemnon, just don't kill him. And this also will I tell you, and it will be a thing accomplished. Some 3 days' time, some day Three times over, such shining gifts shall be given you by reason of this outrage. Hold your hand, then, and obey us. So Athena makes him two promises. She says, first of all, do not kill Agamemnon, because, and here's the first thing, someday, three times over, these shining gifts. You see these shining gifts, you'll get three times this much if you wait and you don't kill Agamemnon. Then what does she say? 1:2:15. Then in answer again spoke Achilles of the swift feet, goddess, it is necessary that I obey the word of you too, angry though I am in my heart. So it will be better. If any man obeys the gods, they listen to him also. There is the second reason that he obeys Athena. The first reason he obeyed Athena is because she promised him three times as many goodies if he gives up his girl peacefully and does not kill Agamemnon. And secondly, if he obeys the gods, 2:13, they'll listen to him. So when he addresses his prayers to the gods, he has to listen to them or they will not answer his prayers. He spoke and laid his heavy hand on the silver sword hilt and thrust the great blade back into the scabbard, nor disobeyed the word of Athena. And she went back again to Olympus, to the house of Zeus of the Aegis, with the other divinities. So she flies back home. But Peleus's son, this is Achilles, once again in words of derision, remember he has permission to use all the bad language he wants, in words of derision spoke to Atreides. This is son of Atreus. Atreides, this is a form of patronymics, and this is in your study guide. Read all of your notes. The son of Atreus is Agamemnon. So now he calls him the Atreides, and did not let go of his anger. You wine sack, with a dog's eyes, with a deer's heart. Never once have you taken courage in your heart to arm with your people for battle, or go into ambuscade with the best of the Achaeans. No, for in such things you see death. Far better to your mind, is it, all along the widespread host of the Achaeans, to take away the gifts of any man who speaks up against you. 2:30. King, who feed on your people, since you rule non-entities, non-important nothings, otherwise, son of Atreus, this were your last outrage. But I will tell you this, and swear a great oath upon it, in the name of this scepter, which never again will bear leaf nor branch, now that it has left behind the cut stump in the mountains, nor shall it ever blossom again, since the bronze blade stripped bark and leafage, and now at last the sons of Achaeans carry it in their hands in state, when they administer the justice of Zeus. And this shall be a great oath before you. Some day, longing for Achilles will come to the sons of the Achaeans. 2:40. So, Achilles has been marching up and down with a wooden walking stick, and this is what he gets to carry when he administers the justice of Zeus. So he's marching up and down with this walking stick. And someday, longing for Achilles, 2:40, will come to the sons of the Achaeans. Someday, the Achaeans, the Greeks, are sure going to wish that they had Achilles back. Then, stricken at heart though you be, you will be able to do nothing. When in their numbers, before man-slaughtering Hector, they drop and die. Hector is the best of the Trojan warriors. And he says, you won't be able to do a thing when man-slaughtering Hector kills him off. And then you will eat out the heart within you in sorrow, that you did no honor to the best of the Achaeans. Which, of course, he means himself. 2:45. Thus spoke Peleus' son, Achilles, and dashed to the ground the scepter studded with golden nails, and sat down again. But Atreides, Agamemnon, raged still on the other side, and between them Nestor the fair-spoken rose up, the lucid speaker of Pylos, from whose lips the streams of words ran sweeter than honey. 2:50. In his time, two generations of mortal men had perished. In other words, he's pretty old. Those who had grown up with him, and they who had been born to these in sacred Pylos, and he was king in the third age. This means Nestor is in his 60s or 70s. He's the king of Pylos, and to be 60 or 70 in ancient Greece is to be very old. He, in kind intention toward both, stood forth and addressed them. Oh, for shame! Great sorrow comes against. the land of Achaia. So this is Nestor. He's old and he's wise. He can say anything he wants to anybody and they will not hurt him. Great sorrow comes on the land of Achaia. Line 255. Now might Priam, the king of Troy, and the sons of Priam, or Priam, in truth be happy, and all the rest of the Trojans be visited in their hearts with gladness. Well, our enemy will be happy now. Were they to hear all this, wherein you two are quarreling, you who surpass all Danans in council, all the Greeks in council, in fighting, yet be persuaded. Both of you are younger than I am. Yes, and in my time I've dealt with better men than you are, and never once did they disregard me. Never yet have I seen, nor shall see again, such men as these were. And now we go into our digression. And this is a bit of ring composition. And what Nestor does is he says, when I was young, and then he tells us, he says, listen to me. One time there were better men than you who listened to me. And he tells him the story of those men at a better time listening to him. And then he says, then they listened. And so you guys better listen to me too. So this is what Nestor says. Never yet, let's see, line 260. In my time I've dealt with better men than you are. Never once did they disregard me. Never yet have I seen, nor shall see again, such men as these were. Men like Peristhus and Dryas, shepherd of the people, Canius and Exadius, godlike Polyphemus, or Theseus, Aegeus's son. This is Theseus of Theseus and the Minotaur. And Canus, that's another mystery. It's an interesting one. In the likeness of the immortals, these were the strongest generations of earth-born mortals, the strongest, and they fought against the strongest, the beast men living within the mountains. The beast men who lived within the mountain, these are the centaurs. They have the upper torso of a man and the bodies of horses, and they live near Mount Pelion in Thessaly in Greece. So these men fought against the centaurs. This battle is what is carved on the Parthenon, on the Acropolis at Greece. The Parthenon is probably the most important piece of archaeology still on the earth. And the Battle of the Centaurs was carved on the Parthenon. So for him to say that these men who were such incredible warriors, they fought the centaurs, and when Nestor spoke, they listened, he is telling them how important his advice is, and that they better listen to him. They fought the strongest, the beast men living within the mountains, and terribly they destroyed them. I was of the company of these men, coming from Pylos, line 270, a long way from a distant land, since they had summoned me, and I fought single-handed. Yet against such men, no one of the mortals now alive upon earth could do battle. And also these listened to the counsels I gave, and heeded my bidding. Do you also obey, since to be persuaded is better. Line 275. You, great man that you are, yet do not take the girl away, but let her be a prize as the sons of the Achaeans gave her first. Nor, son of Peleus, Achilles, think to match your strength with the king, since never equal with the rest is the portion of honor of the sceptered king, to whom Zeus gives magnificence. So Nestor's giving some good advice. He says, you great man, Agamemnon, don't take the girl away. The sons of the Achaeans, the Greeks, gave her to him as a prize. And you, son of Peleus, you, Achilles, don't even think about fighting the king. The king is king because Zeus made him king. The king always gets a bigger portion of honor than everybody else. Even though, line 280, you are the stronger man and the mother who bore you was immortal. Just because you're bigger and could kill him doesn't mean you should. Yet is this man greater who is lord over more than you rule. Son of Atreus, give up your anger. Even I entreat you to give over your bitterness against Achilles, he who stands as a great bulwark of battle over all the Achaeans. Line 285. Then in answer again spoke powerful Agamemnon. Yes, old sir, all this you have said is fair and orderly. Yet here is a man who wishes to be above all others, who wishes to hold power over all, and to be lord of all, and give them their orders. Yet I think one will not obey him. And if the everlasting gods have made him a spearman, line 290, yet they have not given him the right to speak abusively. Then looking at him darkly, brilliant Achilles answered him, So must I be called of no account and a coward, if I must carry out every order you may happen to give me. Tell other men to do these things, but give me no more commands, since I, for my part, have no intention to obey you. And put away in your thoughts this other thing I tell you. With my hands, I will not fight for the girl's sake, neither with you nor any other man, since you take her away who gave her. All right, come and get her. I'm not going to fight you for her. But of all the other things that are mine, beside my fast black ship, you shall take nothing away against my pleasure. Come then, only try it, that these others may see also. Instantly, your own black blood will stain my spear point. So Achilles says, take the girl, but if you try and touch anything else, I'll kill you. So these two, after battling in words of contention, stood up and broke the assembly beside the ships of the Achaeans. Line 305. Peleus' son went back to his balanced ships and his shelter with Patroclus, Menoetius' son, and his own companions. Patroclus is Achilles' good friend. But the son of Atreus, Agamemnon, drew a fast ship down to the water, and allotted into it 20 rowers, and put on board it the hecatomb for the god, and Chryses of the fair cheeks, leading her by the hand. And in charge went crafty Odysseus. So Agamemnon's decided to send her back to her father with the hecatomb, all the animal offerings, and all the goodies, 20 rowers, and put Odysseus in charge. These, then putting out, went over the ways of the water, while Atreus' son, Agamemnon, told his people to wash off their defilement. And they washed it away and threw the washings into the salt sea. Then they accomplished perfect hecatombs to Apollo, of bulls and goats along the beach of the barren salt sea. Line 316. So even here on the beaches, they're also making animal sacrifices, trying to appease the gods. The savor of the burning swept in circles up to the bright sky. Thus these were busy about the army, but Agamemnon did not give up his anger, and the first threat he made to Achilles, but to Talthybius he gave his orders, and Eurybates, who were heralds and hard-working henchmen to him. So he tells them, go now to the shelter of Peleus' son Achilles, to bring back Briseis of the fair cheeks, leading her by the hand. And if he will not give her, I must come in person to take her, with many men behind me, and it will be the worse for him. Line 325. So Agamemnon sends two of his henchmen. He sends Eurybates and Talthybius to go get the girl, because they have the ship all ready. Go get the girl, put her on the ship, and tell him if he doesn't give her over peacefully, I'll come get her myself, and it'll be a lot harder for him. You can imagine how delighted Eurybates and Talthybius are. He spoke and sent them forth with this strong order upon them. They went against their will beside the beach of the barren salt sea, and came to the shelters and the ships of the Myrmidons. The Myrmidons are Achilles' people. The man himself, so Achilles, they found beside his shelter and his black ship sitting, line 330. And Achilles took no joy at all when he saw them. These two, terrified and in awe of the king, this is King Achilles, he's king of the Myrmidons, stood waiting quietly and did not speak a word at all nor question him. But he knew the whole matter in his own heart and spoke first. Welcome, heralds, messengers of Zeus and of mortals. Draw near. He can see them quaking their shoes. You are not to blame in my sight, but Agamemnon, who sent the two of you here for the sake of the girl Briseis. Go then, illustrious Patroclus, and that's his friend, and bring the girl forth and give her to these to be taken away. Yet let them be witnesses in the sight of the blessed gods, in the sight of mortal men, line 340, and of this cruel king, if ever hereafter there shall be need of me to beat back the shameful destruction from the rest. For surely in ruinous heart he makes sacrifice, and has not wit enough to look behind and before him, that the Achaeans, the Greeks, fighting beside their ships, shall not perish. Line 345. So he spoke, and Patroclus obeyed his beloved companion. He led forth from the hut Briseis of the fair cheeks, and gave her to be taken away, and they walked back beside the ships of the Achaeans, and the woman, all unwilling, I suppose they've probably killed all her family, brothers, father, well, her father still lives. They have probably killed many people she loves, and it's hard to say how long she's been with Achilles in his tent, but apparently she's going unwilling. The woman, all unwilling, went with them still. But Achilles, weeping, went and sat in sorrow apart from his companions, beside the beach of the gray sea, looking out on the infinite water. Many times, stretching forth his hands, he called to his mother. His mother is Thetis, and she is a goddess. She's a sea nymph. So he walks to the sea and calls out to his mother. Since, my mother, you bore me to be a man with a short life, he doesn't get to live forever, therefore Zeus of the loud thunder on Olympus should grant me honor at least. If I don't get a long life, I should at least have honor. But now he's given me not even a little. And line 355, now the son of Atreus, powerful Agamemnon, has dishonored me, since he has taken away my prize and keeps it. So he spoke in tears, and the lady his mother heard him, as she sat in the depths of the sea at the side of her aged father. Her father is Nereus, he's the old man of the sea. And lightly she emerged, like a mist from the gray water. So his mother Thetis is coming up out of the sea. She's goddess, and she's coming out to speak to him. Line 360. She came and sat beside him as he wept, and stroked him with her hand, and called him by name, and spoke to him. Why, then, child, do you lament? What sorrow has come to your heart now? Tell me, do not hide it in your mind, and thus we shall both know. Sighing heavily, Achilles of the swift feet answered her. Line 365. You know, since you know, why must I tell you all this? We went against Thebes, the sacred city of Eetion, and the city we sacked, and carried everything back to this place. And the sons of the Achaeans made a fair distribution, and for Atreus' son, Agamemnon, he chose out Chryses of the fair cheeks. So Achilles is telling the story. He says, you know already, why ask? But Homer, of course, for us to know, Achilles has to tell the story. So he tells the story, and he says, well, you know, we've been here fighting Troy all of this time, and we have to get food and women and weavers and cooks. We have to get all of these things from somewhere until we actually destroy Troy. And so we go to all the neighboring little communities, and on this one day we went to Thebes. And at Thebes we carried everything back, and Atreus' son Agamemnon, line 369, got Chryses of the fair cheeks, line 370. Then Chryses, priest of him who strikes from afar, Apollo, came beside the fast ships of the bronze-armored Achaeans to ransom back his daughter, carrying gifts far beyond count, and holding in his hands, wound on a staff of gold, the ribbons of Apollo who strikes from afar, and supplicated, all begged, all the Achaeans, but above all, Atreus's two sons, the marshals of the people, Agamemnon and Menelaus. Line 375. Then all the rest of the Achaeans cried out in favor, that the priest be respected, and the shining ransom be taken. Yet this pleased not the heart of Atreus' son Agamemnon, but harshly he sent him away with a strong order upon him. The old man went back again in anger, but Apollo listened to his prayer, since he was very dear to him, and let go the wicked arrow against the Argives. This is the plague that was spoken of earlier in this book, when they said Apollo was shooting arrows and the men experienced plague for 9 days. When something bad happens to them, they explain it away metaphorically by saying Apollo shot arrows at them. Line 381, and let go the wicked arrow against the Argives. And now the people were dying one after another, while the god's shafts, his arrow shafts, ranged everywhere along the wide host of the Achaeans, till the seer, knowing well the truth, interpreted the designs of the archer. And who is the seer? Calchas. It was I, first of all, urged then the god's appeasement. Well, I was the first one that thought about it, Achilles tells his mother. I'm the first one, line 386, who said, just appease the god, give him what he wants, give the girl back. And the anger took hold of Atreus' son, Agamemnon, and in speed, standing, he uttered his threat against me. And now it's a thing accomplished, for the girl, the glancing-eyed Achaeans, are taking to Chryse in a fast ship, also carrying to the king presents. But even now the heralds went away from my shelter, leading Briseis' daughter, Briseis, why the father and the daughter's names have to be nearly identical, I do not know, leading Briseis' daughter, whom the sons of the Achaeans gave me. You then, if you have power to, protect your own son, going to Olympus and supplicating Zeus. Okay, good, up to Olympus, and ask your father, get my girl back, or revenge. If ever before now, either by word, you comforted Zeus's heart, or by action. 395. If he owes you any favors ever, let this be it. Since it is many times in my father's halls, I have heard you making claims when you said you only among the immortals beat aside shameful destruction from Cronus' son, the dark misted, that time when all the other Olympians sought to bind him, Hera and Poseidon and Polyathena. So he's saying, okay, you say you can sway Zeus like you did this one time. You told me it was only you that got in the way and stopped this. So if that's true, you go change Zeus's mind about this. Line 400. Then you, goddess, went and set him free from his shackles, summoning in speed the creature of the hundred hands to tall Olympus, that creature the gods named Briareus, but all men, Aegeus' son, but he is far greater in strength than his father. He, rejoicing in the glory of it, sat down by Cronion, and the rest of the blessed gods were frightened and gave up finding him. Sit beside him and take his knees and remind him of these things. When the author says, when the poet says, take his knees, line 407, if you are going to supplicate someone, ask for something, ask a favor, beg of them. For example, if you're on the battlefield and your opponent knocks your sword out of your hand and next he can kill you, you throw yourself on your knees, you grab his legs around the knees with one hand and you reach up and hold his beard with the other. Now, this seems threatening to us, but for the ancients, that took care of your enemy's hands. One was around your knee. If you're listening to the Van Diver tapes, you'll pick up on all of this. One was around his knees, and the other is up on his beard, forcing him to look at you, and then you beg for your life. Tell, say your father will give you money, and in this case, Achilles wants his mother Thetis to go and beg, to go and supplicate her father Zeus. Take his knees and remind him of these things now, if perhaps he might be willing to help the Trojans. So Achilles asking his mother Thetis to have Zeus help the Trojans, their enemies, and pin the Achaeans, the Greeks, back against the ships in the water, dying. So he says, not only do I want the Trojans to win, line 410, but I want lots of them to die. While I'm not fighting for them, I want lots of them to die off. I want them to really suffer while I'm not fighting for them, so that thus they may all have profit of their own king, that Atreus' son, wide-ruling Agamemnon, may recognize his madness, that he did no honor to the best of the Achaeans. Thetis answered him, then letting the tears fall, ah me, my child, your birthless bitterness, why did I raise you? If only you could sit by your ships untroubled, not weeping, since indeed your lifetime is to be short, of no length. Now it has befallen that your life must be brief and bitter beyond all men's. To a bad destiny I bore you in my chambers. But I will go to cloud-dark Olympus and ask this thing of Zeus, line 420, who delights in the thunder. Perhaps he will do it. Do you, therefore, continuing to sit by your swift ships, be angry at the Achaeans and stay away from all the fighting. For Zeus went to the blameless Ethiopians at the ocean yesterday to feast, and the rest of the gods went with him. On the 12th day he'll be coming back to Olympus, and then I will go for your sake to the house of Zeus, bronze-founded, and take him by the knees, and I think I can persuade him. Why does Thetis have to wait 12 days to ask Zeus to let the Trojans win, so that Achilles will obviously be the war hero they need? He's off to a picnic, and he won't be back for 12 days. Line 428. So speaking, she went away from that place, and left him sorrowing in his heart, for the sake of the fair-girdled woman whom they were taking by force against his will. Of course, this is his prize, Briseis. But Odysseus, meanwhile, drew near to Chrissy, conveying the sacred hecatomb. He's getting near to the priest. These, when they were inside the many hallowed harbor, took down and gathered together the sails and stowed them in the black ship, let down mast by the forestays, and settled it into the mast crutch easily, and rowed her in with oars to the mooring. So they're rowing their ship in. They threw over the anchor stones and made fast the stern cables, and themselves stepped out onto the break of the sea beach and led forth the hecatomb to the archer Apollo, and Chrysis herself stepped forth from the sea-going vessel. Line 440. Odysseus, of the many designs, guided her to the altar and left her in her father's arms and spoke a word to him. Chrysis, to the priest, I was sent here by the Lord of Men, Agamemnon, to lead back your daughter and accomplish a sacred hecatomb. to Apollo on behalf of the Danaans, the Greeks, that we may propitiate the Lord who has helped unhappiness and tears, who has heaped unhappiness and tears on the Argives. 445. He spoke and left her in his arms, and he received gladly his beloved child. And the men arranged the sacred hecatomb for the god in orderly fashion around the strong-founded altar. Notice how little we have said about the girl. They wrapped their arms in happiness, and that's it. Next, they washed their hands and took up the scattering barley. Standing among them with lifted arms, Chryses, the priest, prayed in a great voice, line 450. Because what will he do now? He'll pray that this curse be released. Hear me, Lord of the Silver Bow, that's Apollo, who set your power above Chryse and Cilla the Sacrosanct, who are Lord in strength over Tenedos. If once before you listened to my prayers and did me honor and smote strongly the host of the Achaeans, so one more time bring to pass the wish that I pray for. Line 455. Beat aside at last the shameful plague from the Danaans. So now he's praying, take away the plague. So he spoke in prayer, and Phoebus, shining Apollo, heard him. And when all had made prayer and flung down the scattering barley, first they drew back the victims' heads and slaughtered them and skinned them. These are the animals, and cut away the meat from the thighs and wrapped them in fat, line 460, making a double fold, and laid shreds of flesh upon them. The old man burned these on a cleft stick and poured the gleaming wine over, while the young men with forks in their hands stood about him. But when they had burned the thigh pieces and tasted the vitals, they cut all the remainder into pieces and spitted them, put them on a spit to roast them, line 465, and roasted all carefully and took off the pieces. Then, after they had finished the work and got the feast ready, they feasted. Nor was any man's hunger denied a fair portion. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, the young men filled the mixing bowls with pure wine, passing a portion to all when they had offered drink in the goblets. All day long they propitiated the god with singing, chanting a splendid hymn to Apollo, these young Achaeans, young Greeks, singing to the one who works from afar. This is another epithet for Apollo, not only Phoebus, shining Apollo, but also Apollo who works from afar, who listened in gladness. Afterwards, line 475, when the sun went down and darkness came onward, they lay down and slept beside the ship's stern cables. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, they put forth to sea toward the wide camp of the Achaeans, and Apollo, who works from afar, sent them a favoring stern wind. Line 480. They set up the mast again and spread on it the white sails, and the wind blew into the middle of the sail, and at the cutwater a blue wave rose and sang strongly as the ship went onward. She ran swiftly, cutting across the swell her pathway. But when they had come back to the wide camp of the Achaeans, when they got back to the Greeks, line 485, they hauled the black ship up on the mainland, high up on the sand, and underneath her they fixed the long props. Afterwards they scattered to their own ships and their shelters. But that other still sat in anger beside his swift ships. Who is that other? Line 488. Peleus's son, divinely born Achilles of the swift feet. Line 490. Never now would he go to assemblies where men win glory, this is Kleos, never more into battle, but continued to waste his heart out sitting there, though he longed always for the clamor and fighting. So he loves to fight. But when the 12th dawn after this day appeared, the gods who live forever came back to Olympus, all in a body, and Zeus led them. Line 495. What did Thetis tell Achilles? Wait till my dad gets back from his picnic with all the gods and goddesses. Wait till Zeus comes back to Olympus, and then I'll beg him to allow the Trojans to start winning, since you are not fighting for the Greeks, so that the Greeks will suffer and die, so you will look more valuable to them. Back to line 495. Nor did Thetis forget the entreaties of her son, but she emerged from the sea's waves early in the morning and went up to the tall sky and Olympus. She found Cronus's broad-browed son, Zeus is the son of Cronos, you'll see that with a C and with a K, broad-browed son, apart from the others, sitting upon the highest peak of rugged Olympus. Line 500. She came and sat beside him with her left hand embracing his knees, but took him underneath the chin with her right hand, and spoke in supplication to Lord Zeus, son of Cronos. "Father Zeus, if ever before, in word or action, I did you favor among the immortals, now grant what I ask for." Line 505. "Now give honor to my son, short-lived beyond all other mortals, since even now the lord of men, Agamemnon, dishonors him, who has taken away his prize and keeps it. Zeus of the councils, lord of Olympus, now do him honor. So long put strength into the Trojans, until the Achaeans, the Greeks, give my son his rights, and his honor is increased among them." She spoke thus, but Zeus, who gathers the clouds, made no answer, but sat in silence a long time. And Thetis, as she had taken his knees, clung fast to them and urged once more her question. "Bend your head and promise me to accomplish this thing, or else refuse it. You have nothing to fear, that I may know by how much I am the most dishonored of all gods." Deeply disturbed, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, answered her, "This is a disastrous matter when you set me in conflict with Hera, and she troubles me with recriminations. Since even as things are, forever among the mortals, line 520, she is at me and speaks of how I help the Trojans in battle. Even so, go back again now, go away, for fear she see us. I will look to these things, that they be accomplished. See then, I will bend my head, that you may believe me, for this among the immortal gods is the mightiest witness I can give, and nothing I do shall be vain nor revocable, nor a thing unfulfilled when I bend my head in assent to it." He spoke, the son of Cronos, and nodded his head with the dark brows, and the immortality-anointed hair of the great god swept from his divine head, and all Olympus was shaken. Line 530. So when Zeus shakes out his beautiful golden curls, all of Olympus shakes. So these two, who had made their plans, separated, and Thetis leapt down again from shining Olympus into the sea's depth. But Zeus went back to his own house, and all the gods rose up from their chairs to greet the coming of their father. Not one had courage to keep his place as the father advanced, but stood up to greet him. Line 535. Thus he took his place on the throne. Yet Hera was not ignorant. Having seen how he had been plotting counsels with Thetis the silver-footed, the daughter of the sea's ancient, of Nereus, and at once she spoke revilingly to Zeus, son of Cronos. "Treacherous one! What god has been plotting counsels with you?" Line 540. "Always it is dear to your heart in my absence to think of secret things and decide upon them. Never have you patience, frankly, to speak forth to me the thing that you propose." Then to her the father of gods and men made answer. Line 545. "Hera, do not go on hoping that you will hear all my thoughts, since these will be too hard for you, though you are my wife. Any thought that it is right for you to listen to, no one, neither man nor any immortal, shall hear it before you. But anything that, apart from the rest of the gods, I wish to plan, do not always question each detail nor probe from me." Line 550. Then the goddess of the ox-eyed, Lady Hera, and this is a wonderful compliment to have ox eyes, "Majesty, son of Cronos, what sort of thing have you spoken? Truly, too much in time past I have not questioned nor probed you, but you are entirely free to think out whatever pleases you." Line 555. "Now, though, I am terribly afraid you were won over by Thetis the silver-footed, the daughter of the sea's ancient, for early in the morning she sat beside you and took your knees, and I think you bowed your head in assent to do honor to Achilles, and to destroy many beside the ships of the Achaeans, the Greeks." Line 560. Then in return, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, made answer, "Dear lady, I never escape you. You are always full of suspicion. Yet thus you can accomplish nothing, surely, but be more distant from my heart than ever. Okay, by acting like this, you're not going to get closer to me. And it will be the worse for you. If what you say is true, then that's the way I wish it." Line 565. "But go then, sit down in silence, and do as I tell you. For fear all the gods, as many as are on Olympus, can do nothing. For fear all the gods, as many as are on Olympus, can do nothing if I come close and lay my unconquerable hands upon you." Here Zeus threatens his wife and sister Hera. "Go sit down, do what I tell you. All the gods do what I say when I threaten them." He spoke, and the goddess, the ox-eyed Lady Hera, was frightened, and went and sat down in silence, wrenching her heart to obedience. And all the Uranian gods in the house of Zeus were troubled. That was line 570. Hephaestus, the renowned smith, and of course a smith is the man who works with a forge, with iron, with different metals. He heats it up. He's got an anvil and an axe. Hephaestus will always have an anvil and an axe with him. He looks like a workman. Hephaestus, the renowned smith, rose up to speak among them, to bring comfort to his beloved mother, Hera of the White Arms. "This will be a disastrous matter, and not endurable if you two are to quarrel thus for the sake of mortals and bring brawling among the gods." Line 575. And so he is trying to comfort his mother and keep the two of them from quarreling. "There will be no pleasure in the stately feast at all, since vile things will be uppermost." Okay, we can't have a nice dinner for all arguing. "And I entreat my mother," line 577, "though she herself understands it, to be ingratiating toward our father Zeus, that no longer our father may scold her and break up the quiet of our feasting." Line 580. "For if the Olympian who handles the lightning should be minded to hurl us out of our places, he is far too strong for any. Do you therefore approach him again with words made gentle, and at once the Olympian will be gracious again to us." He spoke, and springing to his feet, put a two-handled goblet into his mother's hands, line 585, and spoke again to her once more. "Have patience, my mother, and endure it, though you be saddened, for fear that, dear as you are, I see you before my eyes struck down, and then, sorry though I be, I shall not be able to do anything. It is too hard to fight against the Olympian." Line 590. "And there was a time once before now, I was minded to help you. Remember that time I tried to help you? And he caught me by the foot and threw me from the magic threshold, and all day long I dropped helpless, and about sunset I landed in Lemnos on an island, and there was not much life left in me. After that fall, it was the Sintian men who took care of me." Be sure and read all your Solvus notes. Look this up in the glossary, and you'll know all about Hephaestus. "He spoke," line 595, "and the goddess of the white arms Hera smiled at him, and smiling she accepted the goblet out of her son's hand. Thereafter, beginning from the left, he poured drinks for the other gods, dipping up from the mixing bowl the sweet nectar. But among the blessed immortals, uncontrollable laughter went up as they saw Hephaestus bustling about the palace. Thus thereafter, the whole day long, until the sun went under, they feasted. Nor was anyone's hunger denied a fair portion, nor denied a beautifully wrought lyre, musical instrument, in the hands of Apollo." It's also what Apollo does. He has a lyre. "Nor the antiphonal, sweet sound of the muses singing." Line 605. "Afterwards, when the light of the flaming sun went under, they went away each one to sleep in his home, where for each one the far-renowned, strong-handed Hephaestus had built a house by means of his craftsmanship and cunning." Hephaestus built each of them a house on Olympus. "Zeus, the Olympian and lord of the lightning, went to his own bed, where always he lay when sweet sleep came on him. Going up to the bed, he slept, and Hera of the gold throne beside him." Thank you